Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin. This is Q&A with Layla, our weekly feature where we answer your questions. You can send questions to patients at, I'm sorry, not to pay, that's our, no, that's wrong
radio
email,
radioprogram@AOL.com.
Radioprogram@AOL.com gets your questions through to us, and we will endeavor to answer them as they are appropriate. Mm-hmm. And I just want to mention that we have, for those of you who listen to our podcasts, we have a new feature. And it's actually, I thought of this feature because, you know, it's great when we do a podcast and I can say, well, you know, last week we did this and the week before we did that. And, you know, if you scroll back a couple of pages in our podcast list, you'll hear a great interview with Dr. David Perlmutter, for example, or we did a fantastic, you know, somebody will say, well, what about multiple sclerosis? Okay, we did that a few months back. Mm-hmm. Well, what that means is that you might have to scroll back several pages, and or you could put the search term multiple sclerosis into our search box. And I tried that earlier today, and it worked fine. We were able to get the podcast. But I thought that we needed something more. We now have developed a landing page under our podcasts. And what you can do is you can look up a type of condition. Say you want to learn all you can about neurological diseases, or you want to hear all the podcasts on cancer, you want to hear all the podcasts on heart disease, or you want a specific one. You wanted, you know, you remember that we did something with Dr. Teitelbaum. We did that last month. And so you put in that, it's not a search feature. You actually can scroll down and you can see the guests, you can see the themes, and you can, it's another way to get into the podcasts and find them. So we just want to make them really accessible. It's just like if something, we did something 6 months ago and it's like, oh, it's very laborious to find it. I want to make it easy because information that we shared with you 6 months ago is still applicable. And mm-hmm. we don't want it to be like, oh, well, that's old news. It's not.
It's not old news.
It's a resource. And we've literally done by now.
An encyclopedia.
Yeah. It's like hundreds of podcasts. And so we want you to be able to retrieve and binge listen if you can. You know,
yep.
I know you're going to binge watch House of Cards.
Oh, absolutely.
That's fine. You know, you'll go right through the whole series. You won't move a muscle. Just make sure you get up and walk around. You know, drink something because we don't want you to, you know, develop a blood clot from watching binge watching. Take some Pycnogenol.
You binge watch House of Cards,
right? But if you want to binge listen to Intelligent Medicine, that's okay too, and it does not preclude you from doing your household chores or paying your bills or whatever other mindless thing you have to do, drive a car or whatever, walk to work, bump into people, you know, take the commuter train. A lot of people have long commutes, and rather than listen to idle chit chat, you can learn a lot. All right, so much for that. What's our next question? You have a question about multiple myeloma, right?
This is from Terry.
Right.
Terry says, I was found to have multiple myeloma in July 2012, and the first thing the doctor wanted to do was start me on reclass, so I changed doctors.
Right.
Well, now this new doctor wants to put me on reclass.
Okay.
Dr. Hoffman, can I just take strontium?
Okay, so here's the story. With multiple myeloma is a disease of the bone marrow that affects the bones, and it various stages you can do different things. When it's initially discovered, sometimes you just do watchful waiting, in like early prostate cancer. You don't have to treat it radically.
She's in the
smoldering stage. Okay, so that's a stage where you might have to pull the trigger. Now, reclast is a medication that's used for osteoporosis. As such, I'm not a big fan of reclast because it's intravenous bisphosphonate. But the problem with multiple myeloma, one of the most serious consequences of multiple myeloma is that you do develop fractures, but not ordinary fractures, fractures where the slightest pressure can break a bone, and that's dangerous.
Wow.
Now,
yeah.
The interesting thing about reclast is that not only does it prevent you from getting the fractures, but it also slows the disease. So it's used actually to treat the disease and slow the progression. It's a bone malignancy, and it will actually sort of put the brakes on the malignancy. So in that case,
wow.
I think that that's actually not a bad application of the reclast. I mean, I know you're not going to like to hear this. Now, would strontium work as well? I cannot say that it will. It's plausible that it might, but I'm not one of these holistic doctors who says, oh, okay, they want to give you this medication. Don't take it because it's a medication. We'll give you an equivalent that's natural. Yeah, in many cases, that's a much preferable alternative, but sometimes the medication is the appropriate treatment, and we don't know if the natural alternative is good. Now, if this is an ordinary case of osteoporosis, I mean, we just had a lady who came in who had some bone loss, came back 2 years later, and we saw a 10% increase in the right hip, 12% increase in the left hip, 7% yeah. increase in the spine. It was a very nice result. That's all with natural therapy, no drugs.
Yep.
And she had been pestered to go on all kinds of medication. We said
and
no.
She had osteoporosis. It's now reverted to osteopenia.
Exactly. And it's mild osteopenia, and I'm not worried about her. So this is different than just ordinary osteoporosis. And ordinarily, I would be in opposition to using reclast, but I actually think that it could modify the course of the disease and protect you from what could be really a devastating fracture. People with this condition, sometimes they'll cough, they'll develop terrible rib fractures that are extraordinarily excruciating for months. They'll step down off the curb and snap. They'll have like a spinal fracture, which is extremely debilitating. So that's a rationale to use a medication that we might not ordinarily opt for, in my opinion.
Yeah. All right. Terry, best of luck to you.
Sure.
All right. The next question is from Denise. Denise is an RN, and she faithfully listens to your radio program and the podcast, Dr. Hoffman. She's been taking 5,000 IUs of vitamin D for many years, and her new doctor checked her vitamin D, and it was 95.
Okay.
And she told her to stop taking her vitamin D.
Just stop forever?
How high is too high?
Okay. Well,
if she should completely stop taking it.
Yeah, that's close to the upper limits of potential. Sort of there's like just like a traffic light. You know, there's like green light, red light, yellow light. Red light greater than 140. That's, you know, absolutely in the realm of toxicity. 100 to 140 is a yellow light. That means caution. You shouldn't be taking more, and maybe you should cut back. In fact, for sure you should cut back. Up to 100 is okay, but you're a little too close to 100. So my suggestion would be to stop it for a couple of weeks. Not even, you know, I don't even know. At this rate, you know, without a lot of sun, stop for a couple of weeks, then go back on a modest dose, because she'd probably been taking a lot. Did she say how much she was taking?
She was taking 5,000 every day for many years.
Okay, so that, and see, what's interesting is she didn't really get into the toxic zone. So for some conditions like rheumatoid arthritis or a cancer, I'd say, hey, let's keep it high, because you really want to go high on those conditions. But for ordinary prevention, 95 is possibly a little too high, so I would cut it out for a couple of weeks, and then I would resume taking 1,000 or 2,000. And I think the next time that she gets it checked, it'll probably be 50 or 60, and it'll be fine, because it stays in the body for a while. It actually there's a residual effect of vitamin D, so it's not going to go. You know, if you don't take it for 2 weeks, it doesn't mean your vitamin D is going to go to zero.
That's right.
Unlike, well, you know, you earlier you said something about vitamin C, which is very interesting. You said, I sometimes run out of other supplements, but I never stop my vitamin C. If you stop taking vitamin C, your vitamin C levels
plummet. It's going to be like pulling the rug out from under my immune system.
Yeah, because that's a water soluble vitamin, and you know, you might get your body might have gotten used to higher levels of vitamin C, and then all of a sudden you're not delivering that vitamin C. But with vitamin D and the other fat-soluble vitamins, E and K and A, you actually store those. So, you know, from day to day. And the same thing with fish oil. You know, it's like if one day you don't take your fish oil, it's not like, oh, my God, I'll get a heart attack, or you know, or I'll plummet into the deepest, darkest depression or something. Or my joints will start to be super inflamed because,
you know,
I skipped a dose.
We have some patients, and I have to kind of encourage them. All right, okay, so it's all right for you to stop your supplements for 1 week or 10 days because, say, they have a problem with GERD or some other thing going on, or they have diarrhea, which is like, stop everything.
Yeah.
And then they freak out.
They're afraid,
but what do you mean? You will be perfectly fine. You're still eating food.
Right.
You get your nutrition from your food for the most part. And, you know, it'll be fine. Don't worry.
You know, people have been actually known, they have been known to survive for years without taking vitamins. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
In fact, for the entire period of human evolution, people weren't taking vitamins.
Yeah.
Until about 1930 or something. Then they introduced, well, actually, they started having various patent medicines and tonics in the 1800s. But
it's more important today to take our vitamins because the soil is depleted.
Yes.
So where our plants, our vegetables and fruits are growing from, we're not getting the nutrition we would have gotten 200 years ago.
I'm not arguing against vitamins. I'm just saying, you know, let's be, you know, reasonable about it. And
Denise, thank you for your question. Okay. We have another question here. I don't have a name. This person wants to know, what is the optimal level of fish oil and ubiquinol in statin users?
Okay. Well, I'll share something very interesting. This is just hot off the presses. Just a study was just performed this week. It's widely believed that taking coenzyme Q10 or ubiquinol can prevent or ameliorate the statin myopathy, which is that muscle soreness that some people get when they take statins. And actually, I believe that, you know, that's one way, by taking a ubiquinol or taking coenzyme Q10, that you'll help to prevent that from happening. But a recent study was done, and it's a pretty good study, where they put some patients on statin drugs. And these are patients known to have muscle aches when they're on statin drugs. And they were given a pretty good dose of coenzyme Q10, 600 milligrams per day. In previous studies, you could argue, oh, maybe they gave them like 50 or 100. You could say, well, that's a wussy dose. That's not enough. But 600 milligrams a day of coenzyme Q10 is a fair amount. And in that study, there was no difference in the amount of aches and pains they had when they, you know, when they took a statin drug. Now, this, however, does not mean that it's not imperative to take coenzyme Q10 or ubiquinol when you take a statin drug, because there's so many other things that can go wrong in your body when your synthesis of coenzyme Q10 or ubiquinol is interrupted. You know, all your energy pathways are dependent on it. And while this study does not show that it alleviates pain, which I'm a little surprised at, but, you know, I gotta face the facts. That's what the study says. And that doesn't mean that we should throw out CoQ10. It just means that if you have the gene, apparently it's genetic. Some people take statins and they're perfectly fine, it seems. Or maybe the problems are too subtle for them to notice, but they don't have pain. But a certain percentage, I'd say it's about 5-8% of people who take statins no matter what they do, they get really bad aches and pains. And the solution, unfortunately, is not to take coenzyme Q10. But I actually have seen some studies that show that vitamin D can ameliorate that. And having adequate levels of vitamin D helps to reduce the tendency to have aches and pains.
Yeah, a deficiency in vitamin D can cause pain syndromes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But vitamin D is a steroid molecule. And so, therefore, you know, maybe it does something in the pathway that gets interfered with by statins. Who knows? So coming back to the question, because I'm dancing around the question, how much should you take?
How much ubiquinol and how much fish oil? Yeah.
Well, I would say to have a significant, to prevent the complete blockage of coenzyme Q10 and ubiquinol synthesis in the body, you need at least, I would say at least 100 milligrams of CoQ10 twice daily, preferably more like 300 or 400, and or ubiquinol 100 to 200. How does that sound?
Yeah.
And that's what we do when we have patients on statins. We tell them to take 200 milligrams of ubiquinol just to make sure that they have adequate that they're not really going to synthesize it. We're blocking the synthesis. They get it from outside. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then the other thing, and we can measure this. We can actually go into you know, draw a blood test and see if they actually have blood levels that are okay. And where this is particularly important is if they have CoQ10 related symptoms like fatigue or congestive heart failure, we want to really make sure that those levels are decent, like three times the lower limits of normal.
Right.
And then with fish oil, you know, look, you don't have to take fish oil if you're taking a statin. It won't counteract any adverse effects of the statin. But if you're taking a statin, that means you've got cardiovascular disease. So you probably really should take fish oil because that's one of the best things you can take if you have cardiovascular disease.
Well, Dr. Hoffman, everybody's prescribing statins even when they don't have cardiovascular disease.
It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Exactly. But here's the problem.
Fish oil is still good to take.
Yes. Here's the problem I have is that they say, okay, you've got you have some cardiovascular risk. At least, you know, when you're taking that, they say you want to lower cholesterol. But I would say, okay, if you've got cardiovascular risk, well, why don't you attack it in a comprehensive way? Attack it with diet. Attack it with exercise.
Yeah.
Don't just take a statin. If you have to take a statin, okay, fine. But take vitamin K and take resveratrol and take chiolic H garlic extract and make sure you take fish oil and gamma tocopherol vitamin E and pycnogenol and other anti-inflammatory things like curcumin. There's some literature on green tea. And on and on. You know, there are all these protective factors that you can use against cardiovascular disease.
Yeah. Thank you for your question.
Yep.
Okay.
I think we answered it a little less straightforward way than you wanted, but, you know, we had to explain it.
Yeah. We've got another question here. I don't have a name. Hi, Dr. Hoffman. Do you recommend a colonoscopy for people over 50? Is it safe? Is the anesthesia safe? And are there any supplements to take or avoid?
Okay, so this is a big question. First of all, the evidence is there for colonoscopy preventing death from colon cancer, whereas there's actually more controversy about mammograms, which are, according to some analyses, you got to do a heck of a lot of mammograms on a lot of women to save just one woman. And similarly with colonoscopies, you know, the vast majority of colonoscopies aren't going to make a difference, but if you're the person where it's going to make a difference, it's great to pick up colon cancer early. There is a risk, small risk of, you know, accidents occur during sedation, very, very rare. You know, so the Joan Rivers phenomenon, well, that's exceedingly rare. There's, and especially not as common in younger individuals who are healthy, there is the risk of perforation.
Yes.
But it, especially in people with bowel problems, but this test is done, you know, literally millions of times every year, and this happens very rarely, but it's catastrophic if it happens, but, you know. Is it unpleasant? Yes, for some people, but mostly it's done under sedation, so it's pretty comfortable. The most unpleasant part is the purge that you have to do to empty your intestine of stool that can interfere with the visualization. What's coming down the pike are new DNA tests. They actually have approved one, which for people who are absolutely phobic about getting the test, that can be, it's not quite as good, but it's nearly as good. As it has a high degree of sensitivity picking up cancer. And that's a test that, you know, the test will be fought in a couple of ways. One, it'll be fought by on the legal front, because the current legal standard for protecting your patient is to say, get a colonoscopy, not don't get a colonoscopy. Because if you don't get a colonoscopy, God forbid the patient gets cancer, then you know, it's a malpractice suit. So in order to get the alternative test, which is a stool test, approved, they're going to have to convince the attorneys, the legal profession, that that test is an adequate substitute for a colonoscopy, which is really a barrier to progress in this country in terms of innovation. And not only do you have to get something approved by the FDA, but you also have to have it medical legally acceptable, which puts an additional burden of on innovation.
That DNA test, is it specific to colon cancer?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's specific
to
colon cancer. And
wow.
I think more and more we will have to, I mean, already there's a similar test that does something like, not quite, it's not perfect, but it helps to pick up prostate cancer. There's a bladder cancer test that's done with urine. So there are ways to, with super sensitive tests, to pick up DNA fragments tiny, tiny amounts of DNA that are shed by cancers. And so, you know, the answer is you probably should get a colonoscopy. Now, can colon cancer occur before 50? Yes, tragically it can. And, you know, Katie Couric is on a campaign because her, her husband died of that. And then, amazingly, not only did her husband die of that, but her producer on the Today Show at a very young age, I think he was 36. He's back now running CNN. He had colon cancer. So, you know, it's rare, but it's, it, you know, should the age be earlier? Well, if you have a strong family history, if you have suspicion because, you know, you're anemic and you can't explain it, then definitely you got to do it. Or if you have unexplained digestive changes, you know, change in, they say, quote, change in bowel habits. In other words, all of a sudden, you know, you're normal bowel movements all your life, and then you suddenly become constipated. What's going on? Well, maybe it's time for a colonoscopy to make sure that there's nothing going on there.
Or diarrhea.
Or diarrhea, another, but diarrhea is usually not, but can be a symptom of colon cancer. It's more a symptom of colitis, which also deserves a colonoscopy. You know.
What do you think of the anesthesia, Dr. Hoffman? You think it's safe enough?
Yeah, it's pretty safe.
It's not gas. It's Twilight or something, isn't
it? Yeah, it's something that's, you get a little IV in your arm and they put something in your arm. And then they are able to reverse it very quickly with a drug called Versed, which, you know, wakes you up very quickly so that, you know, you're not groggy. You should be accompanied by someone when you go for this test because you might feel a little unsteady in the aftermath, but generally well-tolerated and undergone by millions, if not tens of millions, of Americans annually. And an unfortunate part of the process of aging. You have to face up to that.
All right. Thank you for your question.
And do we have it's like a really short question, or should we reserve that for next week?
We're going to have to reserve for next week.
Okay.
Actually, this is going to be a pretty long one. All right.
Okay. It's complicated. All right.
Yeah.
So when we return, we'll take, what's the question going to be?
It's about chia seeds.
Chia
What's
seeds.
The deal that men shouldn't eat chia seeds? Something to do with prostate cancer, and other people think chia seeds are great, and just for discussion.
We'll have to stay tuned for that, and we'll do our due diligence on the subject of chia seeds in the meantime. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today's guest is Layla Mutin, Hoffman Center nutritionist, known to many of you. And this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.